Boom. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back with the Real Drug Talk podcast. My name is Jack Nagle and this is Real Drug Talk. And just like last year in 2021, in 2022, we talk about all things alcohol and drugs, addiction and recovery. Welcome back, everybody. Hope the new year period and the holidays were really good for you. You had a good Christmas. A good New Year's break. And for anyone listening to this that's been struggling, I hope there wasn't too much carnage or it wasn't too much of a tough time. Because unfortunately in our space, New Year's and Christmas and stuff like that can be a really happy time for a lot of people. But unfortunately for a lot of people as well, as I said, particularly in our space, it can be a really tough time. So I hope it was okay and you got through it. I'm excited. I'm back from holidays, pumped up, ready to jump back into the year. So we're not going to fuck around and we're going to jump straight into it. Just quickly, if there's anyone out there listening, we are growing in our listenership and we're excited to rev it up a little bit in the start of 2022. So if there's anybody listening out there that has a company or a service or an organization that wants to get some more exposure, we're getting more and more listens every month and getting quite a substantial little audience going, not only in Australia, across the world, which is super cool. We're looking for sponsors. Can't believe I'm saying it, but if you want to be a sponsor of the Real Drug Talk podcast and help us out, pretty much all the money will go back into production of the show because we do it all for the love. So hopefully we can make the show a little bit better with some sponsors. So if you like what we're putting down and putting out there and you want to pick it up, we would love anyone that would be interested to sponsor the show. Of course, you have to align. You know, we're not going to start taking on Pfizer money or anything like that. you have to align and have some good conscience about your organization and your brand to help people and all that sort of stuff. But if that sounds of interest to you and it aligns, we would love for you to get in touch. We'll leave our email in the show notes and I can't believe it, but we're looking for sponsors. There you go. So without further ado, let's jump into today's show. Today we have a lady that goes by the name of Shay Sober. That's not actually her name, but that's her Instagram handle. She's creating waves. She's getting a bit of attention, which is really, really cool. I always love it when people feel comfortable enough to share their recovery journey / sobriety story, because I know it's not for everyone, but it definitely helps a lot of people and reaches a lot of people, and she's doing some really cool stuff. So it was awesome to talk to her and get a bit of a different perspective. She's from Utah, the home of my man, Joe Ingles. It was really cool to talk to her and hear her story. And I think it's going to help a lot of people because she talks about her experience with trauma, her experience of being a mum and dealing with alcoholism and getting sober as a mum. And I think a lot of people can relate to that, her mental health, how she got sober and clean, all that sort of stuff. So really good show, really good way to kick off the new year. Go and check her out on Instagram. That'll be in the show notes as well. This introduction is going for too long. As always, if you or a loved one that's listening to this needs help, we run an outpatient treatment coaching program called Connection-Based Living, and we help people to transform their lives out of addictive patterns without having to go to rehab. So if that's of interest to you, the websites and stuff will be in the show notes below. But without further ado, it's 2022. Let's get into the show. Peace. Boom. Welcome everybody to another episode of Real Drug Talk and the first one of the year, which is exciting because we're starting to branch out, spread our wings a little bit. And we've got an international guest today, which I'm excited about. Now, I know you as Shay Sober because that's your Instagram handle. So sorry, what's your last name?
My last name's Mitchell.
Mitchell, sorry. So, we got Shay Mitchell on the show today, who is, I know it's not for everyone and I don't know what your thoughts are, Shay, but I guess you do a lot of stuff and you're very open about your story and your sobriety and stuff like that. And I know a lot of people follow your Instagram that I know from here in Australia and get hope out of it. And I'm not saying that everybody has to do it, but I always think it's really cool when people speak up about their stories, because I don't know about you, but for me, that was the thing that, yeah, kind of helped me to trust a little bit in the process and think that I could do it too. So yeah, it's really cool that you do. So I recommend that everyone check her out after this on Instagram and follow along. But how are you, mate? How's it hanging over in Utah?
You know what? Thank you so much for having me. And it's great over here. It's a little cold, but hanging in, you know? Yeah.
And your basketball team's the home of one of our fan fave Aussies, Joe Ingles. So yeah, we're fond of Utah. I don't know if you're into the basketball, but.
Absolutely. Yes. We love basketball. Basketball is probably my favorite sport, and I love watching the Jazz. So
awesome. Awesome.
And Ingles is awesome.
Love it. Love it. So you're a fan favorite already. So tell us a little bit about your story. Let's jump into it. This is Real Drug Talk. We talk about all things alcohol and drugs, addiction and stuff like that. So yeah, tell us how you fit into this picture and what your story's been with substances and alcohol in particular.
Yeah, thanks for the platform to let me kind of share what I've been through in this journey. It's, if anyone's out there listening and they do relate, it's kind of like, I'm sorry and good, because, you know, I know it's not a fun journey necessarily to be on, but we can get past hard things. So that's what I try to spread hope for. So a little bit about me. My journey, I didn't even have my first drink of alcohol until I was 19.
Wow.
And moved out of the house, because I was actually raised in a conservative religious household where the religious rules taught that we didn't drink.
Right. I was going to ask, I didn't want to interrupt, sorry, because it's, I know it's weird over Zoom, but would you say that's a usual thing in the States, that people don't drink till later? Because what's the legal drinking age? Is it 21? Is that right?
It is 21.
Right.
I couldn't say like in the States necessarily, for Utah, we have a large percentage of people that were raised the same way I was raised, in that same conservative religion. Like our political figures are swayed by it, things like that. Right. We have really kind of crazy liquor laws to a lot of people. We don't have wine in our grocery stores. You can't get hard liquor or wine in our grocery stores or our gas stations or convenience stores is what you call them. You can only get wine and hard liquor in state-run stores.
Interesting.
And I hated that when I was drinking, because it's like, why are you making this so hard for me?
You say state runs stores, do you mean like the what do you call it there? Like the county government runs the alcohol shop?
It's called the DABC, which stands for drug and alcohol. Now I'm not even sure exactly what it is.
Commission or something. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just part of our state government that runs it all.
Wow, that's interesting. There you go.
Yeah, it's pretty intense how controlled it is here. People come from other areas and they're pretty confused, because even the state liquor stores aren't open on Sunday. So you can't get anything on Sunday.
So everyone buys a lot on Saturday night.
Saturday night is, lines out of what we call the liquor store.
Yeah. Interesting. Sorry. Yeah. Well, there you go. So, the laws are a little bit different there, and it's a bit interesting. And that sounds like part of the reason why, you didn't have your first drink or whatever it was until 19.
Yep, exactly. So it was an interesting aspect about that, however, was my parents drink. And my dad was actually an addict. So he experimented with, some harder stuff. And unfortunately, that's something that he still struggles with. But my mom, she drank, and she did that till I was about 11 or 12. But then she just found that alcohol wasn't serving her.
Yep.
She didn't have that obsession that I have when it comes to alcohol.
But
she just quit it, and she's been happy with that decision ever since. So it's really nice to have a mom that is sober you know, yeah. by choice as well. That's super helpful.
Yeah.
So, but when I would see them drink growing up, I would see them having fun and yeah. enjoying themselves, you know? And so as a kid, as an impressionable kid, it was very hard for me to have them tell me, don't do this, but watch them enjoy doing it. And just very, very confusing. And so, yeah, I kind of suffered a little bit of like religious trauma and stuff like that, seeing that from them.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think, cause that's what I was going to ask, like, cause I think, you know, obviously in most places in the Western world, how you described alcohol is in Utah, it's like that, if not more restricted around like drugs, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So, and I always say to people that just even that, it's not the whole reason, but it's a little part of the cake mix, that sort of not being allowed to have it creates like the interest and intrigue. Like, do you think that was part of it for you, that you were sort of curious about it because it was forbidden?
I've always described myself as the type of person, tell me to do something and then watch me do it. Or tell me not to do something and then watch me do it.
Yeah.
You know, because that's just how I am. Just very rebellious. It's part of my nature. And so, yeah, I think that played a big part into it.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. So how did it progress from when you first started drinking? And yeah, like what was the path to destruction, if you like?
Sure. So I, like I said, I had my first drink when I was married. So married young, out of the house. Me and my then husband went to a convenience store. We were underage because you can't buy liquor until you're 21, or beer even, and waited for someone that we thought we could ask that was going into the store to get us some. And so that was our first experience with it. And that was just with like, I don't know what you call them, like an Alka-Pop, like a,
yeah.
like a spritzer or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was my first time drinking and I didn't get drunk from it.
Yeah.
So it was actually kind of a first strange experience, but then we continued to drink and experiment with it. And once I kind of felt that first buzz from there, uh-huh. I was hooked. I think that I probably knew there was a problem with how much I liked this in the very beginning.
Wow.
Really, it hit me that hard. I was able to be outgoing. I wasn't this shy person anymore. I was uninhibited when it came to just talking to people. And yeah. that made me feel good because I spent a lot of time, you know, growing up all through my school age years, feeling quite shy and a little misunderstood in that way. And it brought out the fun side of me in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I was addicted to that feeling too.
Interesting.
I can be social. The social anxiety melted for me.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So that was kind of that initial thing. And from there we would party like we were in college, because we were college age kids doing the marriage thing. Me uh-huh. and my first husband, because we were, you know, we were high school sweethearts, got married really young. And just during that time, I got a little crazy when I get drunk. I had some PTSD from my childhood, unfortunately, just some sexual assault situation. And that stuff came out all these years later.
Yeah.
Because I was drinking and the alcohol allowed some past stuff to kind of surface.
Yeah.
So that ended up really harming that marriage. We ended up getting divorced quite quickly. It was only about 2 years that we were married. So I got divorced young. And the shame from that divorce, especially because, again, the religious aspect of how I grew up, divorce was not looked upon very well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I got divorced, my drinking definitely amplified. Uh-huh. It kind of became that shame cycle thing where I didn't want to feel the pain. So I would drink, but then I would do something stupid. And so I would swear that I wouldn't drink. And then I would drink because I did it. It was just this whole trying to always numb out and not feel the hard things or not feel any of the embarrassing things that I did. And I, that's how I learned to deal with every emotion.
Right.
You know, from then on, it was just, I drank to feel, if I felt sad, I drank, if I celebrated, I drank all the
time.
Do
you think you were like conscious of that at the time, or were you just like trying to feel better?
That's a good question, because in the beginning, I really felt that it was a self-control thing.
Right.
I think being so young, you can't really understand the addictive qualities of alcohol and how quickly they can kind of get their grasp on you.
Yeah.
And so after I got divorced, I ended up drinking daily, and I hid that drinking, I think, quite well. I ended up finding my current husband during that time and getting married. I was able to function enough to like start a whole new relationship. And I feel very bad for how much I hid it from him in those years.
Did he know it all? Like, did he know that you were a drinker, but just not the extent, or just he didn't know it all?
Yeah. So he knew I was a drinker. Our how we met story is a little silly. I met him a week after my divorce. I was at a house party and I had gotten so drunk that I fell down the stairs. And he picked me up, and I don't remember this night. This is what, you know, that I always say, this is the night that he met me, not the night I met him.
Yeah.
But, you know, we kept on kind of running into each other, and 9 months later we were together. And, but yeah, I was hiding it from him definitely the whole time.
Yeah.
For a couple of years, actually.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like alcohol does, it starts to show itself a little bit more and a little bit more. And my family could recognize some of the signs that maybe he couldn't, because he probably just didn't really know any different.
Right.
And so I got a letter from my baby sister, and she was like, I think you need help. I was like, oh, crap. Someone knows. No. So that kind of threw me, and I was like, oh, you know, it was the first time I had to really take a look at it, and I had to address that people saw, and maybe I did have a problem. And so I went to an inpatient rehab.
Yeah.
And that was in 2010.
Right.
So I completed that. I did actually 90 days. And I, you know, I felt like I was cured, because I wasn't going to rehab at that point. I still didn't feel like I was an alcoholic, or that I, you know, was never going to be able to drink again. I just was not at that point in 2010.
Right. Yeah.
So when I came out of it, I was like, oh, okay, you know, I'll stay sober. I got pregnant, so I stayed sober through that pregnancy.
Yeah.
And, you know, raised my little baby for a little bit and stayed sober because it felt good. And it felt right to stay sober when I had an infant, to still prove to people in some way that
you're in control a little bit.
That I was, yeah, absolutely. And I was totally faking myself out too. Like trying to fake all the, you know, trying to pretend and fake everyone out, including myself. So yeah, I stayed sober, I want to say almost 2 years after I went to rehab in 2010. Went back to it, thought I can control it this time, and I spent the next, until I got sober this time, just doing ups and downs of that. You know, people would be like, oh, you have a problem, and I would prove that I didn't with 4 months of sobriety.
Yeah, right.
and it was just always the obsession of going back to it.
Yeah. So interesting. So I want to ask you a whole bunch of questions out of all of that. So just going back to like when you were drinking, when you met your current husband, all that sort of stuff. How hard was it to like hide the extent of your drinking? Like, yeah, did you feel like you were living a double life? And were you doing the stereotypical stuff that you see on like the movies, like hiding bottles in washing machines and stuff like that?
Yes, I did. So I worked at a tanning salon when we were first together, and I would, you know, buy bottles and bring it to the tanning salon because I don't know, I needed to drink to handle customers, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
I needed to drink to get through the work. I needed to drink for everything.
Yeah.
I felt like for all those years, it was my way to cope, to do pretty much everything. So I would do that. And then the management, I would bring it in a water bottle and put it in my purse. And the management started taking the water bottle out of my purse, but they didn't address it with me.
Right, right.
So they were taking my alcohol, but not addressing with me that I had brought alcohol. And I obviously knew that they were taking it, but I wasn't saying anything to them because how embarrassing, like, you took my alcohol.
Yeah.
why are you doing that? You know, like,
that's funny.
Just so crazy. And like one evening I decided to have a tan at the end of my shift and fell asleep in the bed. And my husband like was knocking on the doors at 2 a.m. trying to wake me up. Like, where are you? What is going on? And he didn't know that I was drinking at work.
Yeah.
So he wasn't, yeah, he just didn't know a lot of things until later on.
It all came out. Yeah. Interesting. And for anyone that's like not watching this and just listening to the audio, yeah, like it's what Shay's describing is kind of extreme. And I think it's part of the what we're trying to do with this show is that Shay looks like the girl next door, right? Like just like that life wouldn't be your life. You know what I mean? So and it's interesting how it kind of plays out. So at the time when you were drinking that much and doing those kind of things, were you saying to yourself like, fucking hell, like things are out of control here? Or were you just kind of just in a bit of a haze and just like going about your life doing what you were doing?
Yeah. I knew deep down that I was fucking up left and right.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Just... It was insanity, and I knew that somewhere inside of me, but I was just almost refusing to admit that to myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that that's what kept me drinking so hardcore too, because, you know, I didn't start out drinking in the mornings. I didn't start out taking those liquor bottles to work at the tanning salon. I didn't start out hiding bottles in the back of the toilet can, you know, in the water in the back where it holds all the water until later, but it progressively came to those things. And then, you know, it was all those things combined. And for me, I thought I was just surviving.
Right.
Because I also became a mom during some of these years. And I just truly didn't know how to cope with motherhood.
Yeah.
And that was the best way I knew how. And so in my mind, sometimes I was like, well, I have to wake up. So I have to have a shot to wake up because otherwise I'm not going to be able to wake up right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was just all these justifications for doing it and not really pinpointing why I was always so miserable and always just, you know, feeling like crap, quite frankly.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Articulate it really well. And it's, it is a good point, that you raise, you know, around the motherhood stuff, because there's a lot of people that we talk to that are experiencing that as well. And it's another reason why it's cool that you speak out about your story, because there is so many, like women experiencing those situations early on in motherhood. But yeah, there's not many stories out there about people's experiences because of what you described before. There's the feelings of shame that come along with it and all that sort of stuff. So
yeah. I also felt justified in a sense because I would follow mommy wine culture accounts. I would follow the, all the mommy play dates where there's wine at every mommy play date and every birthday party. And that was acceptable. And those were the type of people that I hung out with because I wanted to be able to do those things. Yeah. And I just didn't see the actual like chaos that it was causing. I wasn't getting honest with myself for a really long time.
100%. Yeah. And that's really interesting. So that was the other thing I was going to ask you, like when you went into rehab, what kind of, you know, so was that, sounds like it was like a 12-step based rehab there. And, mm-hmm. and did you struggle with like the concepts that they were talking about there, or was it just the overall experience of going to rehab, or what was that initial resistance after you did the 90 days?
Yeah, good question. So the 90 days for me was going to teach me how to drink better.
Yeah.
It was, you know, the therapy was going to teach me how to control my drinking. It was also going to get me past the things I I thought that I was just shrinking to cope with my past trauma. And I thought, oh, I've been therapized now, so I don't need to cope. I'm not going to cope with drinking. I'll just be able to drink normal and I'm not going to have to feel like I overdrink. And yeah. So there were all these falsities in my head that yeah. I was like making justifications for just so that I could go back to the drink.
Right.
And sorry, I may have kind of gone off track there, but
100% on point.
So yeah, I mean, with the 2 years, I just thought that, oh, I'm sober for 2 years. I can control it now. And when I went back to it, it was progressively quicker that it came back harder for me to recover from hangovers, or, you know, I started drinking more, or I started drinking in the morning. Like every single time that I would get sober for an amount of time to prove to someone else that I was fine, and I would drink again, every time it would get worse quicker. Like I would go to the hospital. It was just like, yeah, it's a very progressive illness.
It is funny that, right? Like I have found that as well for people. Yeah, like it's interesting to what that is. But once someone once someone engages in treatment and then for whatever reason they go back to drinking or using substances or whatever, even if it doesn't happen straight away, like the net result always ends up worse than when they came the first time. And I don't know whether that's because they're more aware or something, right? But it is interesting how that happens, you know. And it sounds like you mentioned there, you know, that it's a progressive illness. Like, has that been the thing that's helped you in your journey, you know, like the disease model and understanding it, addiction as a disease and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, and that's a hot topic for a lot of people. I've had quite a few threads under some of my posts. Like, a disease, it isn't a disease. And it's like, I can't argue because the top researchers, scientists, and doctors can't come to a conclusion on it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I have a hard time like saying too much about that particular part of it. I just know that I finally realized I can never moderate it.
Yeah.
And that was my thing for so long was, okay, I've done this new thing. I can control it now. So yeah. I would go back and then it would come harder and faster, the consequences. And I would be like, okay, I'll stop and I'll learn this thing. Okay, I can control it now. And it was that repetitive, this brain thing of, I've learned something new, so now I must be able to control it, which is just, it's just not the case.
Yeah, 100%. And so
it took me, I like to say about a decade to get there of going back and forth.
Right.
To finally be like, oh, wait. So I really can't fucking control this, huh? Like, yeah. Like ever. So yeah. I should probably just accept that. And now, since I can't have that, like make a life that I can have fun with without it, because otherwise, like, what the fuck?
Yeah, 100%. That I think that is the key point. And I'm with you, right? Like, so that's where I've come to with it is that like you said, the biggest brains in the world can't sort of make their mind up on it. So, or there's no consensus, but it's just kind of whatever works for people. And at the end of the day, if you're getting sober and your life's getting better, then that's what it's all about. And that's what you should, that's what people miss sometimes. I don't know if you agree, like it becomes about just stopping drinking or stopping using drugs or whatever. And they forget about, like you said, creating a life that is like awesome, that they don't want to give up and that's worth doing it, because why would you continue doing something if it's shit?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that a lot of people obsess about going back to the drink for some reason. Like they just don't take their toe out of the proverbial drinking pool and say, oh, I can never dive back into that. I have to come out completely.
Yeah.
That's what kept me stuck.
Yeah.
For so long. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Interesting. So yeah, you said that you had like a decade of bouncing around and working out like, you know, how this was all going to work for you. Was there like a defining moment? Was there something that happened, or was there someone you met, or yeah, what was the thing that really I always say, like, what made it go like da-dunk in your mind, and you just da-dunk. Went, oh, yeah, just like dropped that. In. Yeah,
yeah, I like that. I might steal that da-dunk, because people always call it a click, and I'm like, oh, I hate that, because before I had the click, I didn't know what the hell they were talking about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, after having my second daughter, I went through some postpartum depression that I was undiagnosed, and I really didn't realize that I had that going on. It led to even more drinking, you know, and so my mental health really declined.
Right.
And this was in 2019. And I actually ended up in the behavioral health unit due to suicidal ideations.
Right, right.
So it got really bad to the point where, you know, I was thinking that my kids and my family were better off without me. And that just, I mean, even thinking about that today just breaks my heart, because I never knew how people could get to that point until I was there myself.
Yeah.
So yeah, that landed me in the behavioral health unit for 3 days, and they got me medicated, and that really helped, because it was a big wake up call. That, you know, I've really deteriorated down to a point where, I'm not okay with being here.
Yeah.
And so I got sober for about 4 months. We made a move. We moved about 30 minutes from where we had been for about 12 years.
Yeah.
There's a quote out there that I like that says something about you can't get better in the same place you got sick, or something like that.
Yeah.
And that really rang true for me. My environment was really toxic.
Right.
So it was really nice. I was very fortunate to be able to make an environment change. However, I still went back to drinking again after that. I mean, and that's the insanity of this disease. And that's the cunning, baffling part, because even after a behavioral health unit, getting on medication, getting a psychiatrist, starting to see a therapist, I still went back and thought, okay, for sure, I'm not going to let it get to that point again.
Yeah.
Well, that was the beginning of 2020, right before COVID hit and everything got a little bit nutso.
Wow.
And so I drank through the lockdown. Me and my husband really stocked up on the booze, because we thought our liquor stores were going to be shut down.
Yeah.
And, you know, with where I was at the point of my sickness after 16 years, basically of drinking.
Wow.
I was at that point where it was hitting me very fast. So I started drinking New Year's 2020, and I ended up in the ER by April for just dehydration and an insane hangover that I couldn't get past on my own. I needed IV fluids to recover from. So I ended up in an ER situation. And then again, at the end, so that was the beginning of April. And then within only about 20 more days, I was in the ER again. So this final relapse of mine, which was only 5 months long, I ended up in the ER twice, and I had a 3-day bender around a holiday that we celebrate here called Cinco de Mayo,
right,
which is May 5th. And I woke up the day of May 6th after that, and I probably should have gone to the hospital again.
Right.
And I could not believe myself. I was like, a week later after being in the hospital, you really need to go to, like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I was like, okay, holy shit. It clicked. Like, that was it. Like, it clicked. Like, I'm an alcoholic. I admit it. I'm owning that. I'm okay. If that's what it is, if that's the term, some people hate the term, that's fine. I love it, because it gives me a definition.
Yeah.
It gives me something like, I'm an alcoholic. Like, I can't drink. I can't. So, I owned that. I told my therapist, and I just started really, that's when I was like, okay, I need to make some foundational decisions here, get some foundational tools under my belt so that I can be successful.
Yeah. So, and it sounds like you had that epiphany, which is really cool, that I find myself like talking to people about all the time, is that thing, like you said, you know, you can't like have the desire to change. You can't just like want it to change. You actually have to like do something different to make, like, so that you don't go back to it when you're in that spot. And it sounds like that happened. What were those like foundational changes? Like what stuff did you start doing differently?
Yeah, I'm kind of a really all in or all out person. So when I knew that I needed to make this change, I did all the stuff. So I had already had my psychiatrist, but I got honest with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I wasn't really telling them the full story, but I got honest with them. And my psychiatrist got me on an anti-craving medication that was very, very beneficial for me, because in the past I felt like I was always succumbing to cravings. And so being able to be on this medication, I rarely experienced cravings, and that was really helpful for me. So I would say that medication was a big foundational tool, because I was also using alcohol to cope with depression and anxiety and anger and sleep. Like I was using alcohol for all of my symptoms, for everything. And so I got on actual prescriptions to help with those things. And then I saw my therapist really frequently. And I, like I said, was really honest with her. We dove into a lot of the past trauma that I wasn't really willing to confront for a long time. And it's okay if you go slow with that kind of stuff. Like I know a lot of people get really scared. Like, oh, no, I'm not ready to open that can of worms. And even if it takes a while, that's okay. But for me, that was just really lethargic to have someone that I could kind of start going through some of that trauma with, and resolving it. That was important. Another thing I did was, have you ever heard of, do you guys have intensive outpatient programs there?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So instead of an inpatient rehab this time, I decided to try that route, especially with COVID and everything. Yeah. So it was on Zoom, and I did it 3 nights a week, wow. 3 hours a night for 4 months.
That would have been crazy getting sober, like in the middle of the pandemic.
it kind of was, but there's so many tiny things that I look back on now that I'm so grateful for, because I didn't have those temptations to like go to parties because no one was having them and things like that. It was kind of like, I was able to isolate.
Yeah,
in a good way instead of a bad way, like I was drinking. So the IOP, I read a lot of quitting literature that really opened my eyes to different ways of living that, like, because I wanted to find joy without alcohol. I didn't know how to have fun or have real authentic joy. I had only felt that way for 16 years with alcohol.
Yeah.
So I was really afraid of how that was going to be possible, but it is.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just like listening to everything you're saying, it's funny, and it's so hard for, like, I'll speak for myself. Like I know for me, it was super hard. All that stuff you just explained, where you finally get to that point and you go, I need to like not be 90% honest. I need to be like 100% honest, like lay it all out on the table, get it all out, commit completely with my actions, to this whole process. And it's like scary as when you start doing it, but then when you start getting wins on the board pretty quickly, and you build some momentum. So it's really cool. And it sounds like trauma has been a big part of your story. Like, have you found that to be one of the most important things for you to get on top of?
Absolutely. I think that once I was able to think about those things without having that trigger response of, panic, that was monumental to my recovery. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super interesting. So like, what's changed in this kind of short time of you being sober? And when I say short time, it's not to minimize it, but when you think about it, versus like 16 years, it's crazy. And it seems like you're doing so well, you know?
Thank you so much. Yeah. It is kind of crazy, because I was going from these weekly therapy sessions, and this year we decided to move to just once a month. And I was kind of like, she's my best friend at this point. I've been talking to her about all my problems for these last couple of years, and but we'll maintain, and that's fine. And I think that it's good. We have to get to a point where that's the goal, right? To get to a point where you don't need someone to talk to on this constant basis.
Yeah. You don't want to be dependent anymore.
Yeah, on anything, right?
That's right, yeah.
And that's another thing. I'm actually med-free now after 20 months, you know?
Amazing.
Cool. I was on all those meds. I was on like 7 prescriptions at once, but now, yeah, I'm completely med-free. So that's totally possible too. I want people to know that. I was really afraid that I was going to have to be on medication for my whole
yeah.
life.
Yeah.
But as I was able to do therapy and, you know, change some behaviors and change some thinking, and learn some different kinds of techniques, just like mindfulness and grounding and just simple yeah. as like breathing techniques sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's possible. So that's been awesome. I've gotten really busy. I had no clue. I was so afraid of boredom. It's yeah. like, wow, all I do is drink. Like, what am I going to do if I'm not drinking? And so, yeah, that was a big part of my sober Instagram, starting that, not yeah. only for the accountability, but also as something to do. It made me start kind of creating graphic design and getting creative with making yeah. my memes and something new to kind of put my focus into. And I also think when I wake up every day and I have to think about something recovery related to put out there, it's just a great way to be like, oh, I'm sober. Oh, yeah. I don't drink today. And that's just yeah. how it sets the tone for the whole day. So yeah, that's changed. My kids love me again.
Yeah.
Oh man. They were getting to a point where they just like, there was no reason for them to come to me. I was always sick. I was always like in a bad mood. And if I wasn't in a bad mood, I was probably pretty drunk and yeah. like a little bit weird maybe.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it's been really great to see the change from them and how they've responded to that too. I've been really lucky.
It's really cool. It's really cool. And I was going to ask you that. Yeah. Like what made you decide to kind of put your journey out there? So, how long did you say that you've been sober for now?
I just reached 20 months.
20 months. Wow. So yeah, congratulations. It's Thank awesome. You. So did you like start your Instagram from scratch 20 months ago? Well, and isn't that just like proof that, because, you know, I'm sure people jump on and give you a follow that are listening, but yeah, like it must be connecting. Cause I think, there's like 10,000 or more or something people following you now. So how good's that, that it's like resonating and obviously connecting with people and stuff like that. So
it's fantastic. I didn't expect this kind of, you know, the kind of response.
Yeah.
But honestly, that's my goal, is to reach the person that's still suffering and to maybe help someone come to that click or that before they reach a too hard of rock bottom, maybe.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it's become. It remains an accountability for me. It remains a journal of sorts for me to just get my feelings out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, the accountability aspect of it is so huge for me, and just really trying to reach. I don't want people to suffer with this addictive substance. They don't have to. And I want them to know that life is, I just wouldn't have believed myself, you know, when I, if I was listening to myself and I was still drinking, that it truly, truly is more enjoyable.
Yeah.
And
yeah. What do you reckon the best thing is about it in the last 20 months? Like, what's been the best thing?
Goodness. The connections and reconnections that I've made. So my reconnections yeah. with my family. I mean, my family was just getting to the point where they were just sick of me. They were sick of my nonsense. They were sick of the, you know, never knowing who they were going to get from me. And so they, you know, they distance themselves, and yeah. I don't blame them for that, you know, including my husband and my kids and my siblings and my mom. So yeah, I've really been able to reconnect with them. We're super close. We're going to do a little mom and sister's trip in February. I'm excited about that. And yeah. Then also the authentic connections I've made in the sober community.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people are afraid they're going to lose their friendships when they get sober, and you might, because you just won't have as many things in common. I've had a couple of friends that have given sobriety a go, and yeah. we've been able to kind of reconnect because we're doing kind of similar things again. But
yeah.
the thing that's crazy is when you aren't hanging out with the people that are drinking, you have room to find people that aren't, that fit your new lifestyle. So it's been real. I feel like my connections are so authentic, like that, and we can be our real true selves.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah. It feels nice not to like kind of hide yourself anymore. Huh?
Yeah. And I can talk about my alcoholism and I can like joke about it and talk about all the stupid fucking shit we did. Like we get the war stories that we've all survived.
Yeah.
And it's just a camaraderie that you just can't really find unless someone understands the experience of addiction.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting. Right. And I think it's cool that you talk about that stuff because I don't know. Like, I know you have to talk about the problem, obviously, to help people relate and stuff like that. But I think that can be the message that rubs off a bit too much sometimes, is like, it's going to be a really hard fucking process. It's going to stick with you forever. This is challenging. But, and we forget to like tell people about all the good stuff that happens as a result of it and that it's better, you know? So
it's true. It's true. The whole, instead of focusing on the one thing you're giving up, focus on all the things that you're going to be able to gain by not having that. I mean, I remember when I was drinking, there was just always this constant like battle of all these questions. Questions that I was asking myself to not have this inner. Oh, you might be cutting out. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. We got sucked into the Zoom universe a little bit there.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. That's all right. I think it was on my end. Hey, so like I think that's a good note to end it on, like the positivity. But I really appreciate you coming on. Zooming in all the way from Utah. It's pretty cool for us. And B, yeah, like I appreciate you sharing your story. Particularly as a mom, as a woman that's gone through this, because we're finding, we're trying to get more people on to talk about those things. Cause there's a lot of people, I guess, in secret that talk to us about it, but, they struggle to find stories and come across, hopeful experiences and stuff like that. So I appreciate it, mate. It's awesome that you're being so open about it.
I appreciate that a lot. Thank you so much. I think vulnerability is power. So once you get to the point where you're able to share your story and it doesn't feel traumatic for you, I would highly suggest doing it in whatever platform that you're comfortable. Like, I think it's awesome how you're on podcasts, you know, you're also on Instagram, but we reach different people on different, in different ways because different people learn in different ways, right?
100%.
So, yeah, thank you for doing this and getting recovery and the word out there that it's possible. And thank you for having me.
No worries. So just quickly, I'll put it in the show notes, but where's all the places that people can find you? Is the main place kind of the gram?
Yeah, the gram for sure. I finally launched my website though. So the website will have everything. So I meant to mention this to you because I'm working with a company that's in Australia, like you. I don't know if you've heard of the Arlie app.
Oh yeah, cool. I think they might have launched. They're in like testing mode or something, right?
Yeah. They're launched, but it's still kind of beta.
Right.
I'm a guide for them. So that's been really fun. Amazing. And I've loved connecting with them and kind of being able to share some of my lived experience through that platform. That's been really cool. So you can find me on the Arlie app.
Awesome.
You can find my website, which is shaysober.com.
Yeah. Awesome.
And that will link you to my Facebook, my Instagram. If you want to send in your alcoholism war stories, we'll feature it on there.
Love it.
Read other people's war stories and know that you're not alone, that we all survive them. But yeah.
Awesome, mate. Awesome. All right. Thanks so much. Everybody, make sure you go and give her a follow. She's a star. And I'm sure we'll have you back again soon. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Jack. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
There we go, beautiful people. First cab off the rank for 2022. Hope you enjoyed that. Again, check out all Shay's stuff. All the links for her Instagram and all the other stuff she's doing will be in the show notes and in the bio of the show.
And yeah, I just hope that you guys are kicked off the year well, and that you're excited and making changes, and breaking through old addictive patterns. If you need a little bit of extra support with it, or you're looking to do something as part of your New Year's resolution, or you just want to make a change around addictive patterns, again, we run connection-based living. That's also in the show notes. We help people to transform their lives out of addiction without rehab. So check that out. And also remember, we're looking for sponsors. Give us some cash. We want to take all your cash. No, I'm joking. We just want to improve the show and get it out there for people. And I think we've built up a big enough audience now to make it worthwhile for people to sponsor us. And then we can funnel those funds back into the production of the show. So if that sounds of interest to you, and you have an organization, a product, or something that aligns with what we do, yeah, as I said before, give us your cash. No, yeah, we look forward to having some of those conversations with you guys. Hope you can be a part of the team, and we can help each other out. So my email for that will be in the show notes. Look, have a great week, guys, and we'll be back next week with another episode. Peace.